This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby in for Virginia Prescott. I was born in 1984, a full 7 years after the release of the first Star Wars movie, and yet I cannot remember a time when I did not know the names of Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, or Darth Vader. Not because I'm a huge fanboy or anything, Star Wars is just that ubiquitous. It's always been there. But what's most interesting about the Star Wars franchise to me is the peculiar role that fandom has played in its success. Star Wars fans are among the most vocal and passionate group of enthusiasts Hollywood has ever inspired, but they're also some of the most critical. Chris Taylor is the deputy editor at Mashable and author of How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, a diligently researched history of the franchise. I spoke with him when the book first came out. It was released on paperback earlier this week. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Taylor.
So Star Wars, as we all know, was created by George Lucas, the creator, and he was, of course, influenced by a number of films and stories that came before. But how quickly after A New Hope was released did fans start to have their own influence on the franchise moving forward?
I think pretty much immediately. I mean, the first thing that you saw, and a lot of people who saw the movie in theaters told me this, that the first thing they saw straight away, even on day one, was T-shirts. You know, people were producing Star Wars T-shirts. They weren't licensees of Lucasfilm. They were just local T-shirt entrepreneurs, and they were producing buttons. There were buttons all over the place saying, "May the Force be with you," and "I'm hot for Han Solo," straight away from day one. And this is not something that Lucasfilm ever expected. They did get famously rather good merchandising rights in the deal for the original Star Wars. But it was really the fans that took it off and ran with it before that merchandise even hit stores.
And that level of success and that level of enthusiasm really wasn't predicted. I mean, it opened in what would be considered today a handful of theaters.
Yeah, just 32 theaters on the first day, rising to about 40 by that weekend, which was not actually that unusual in those days. It was Jaws that had sort of pioneered the widescreen release on thousands of screens at the same time. But certainly Star Wars would have liked to have opened on more of that, and theater owners would have liked it to be more widespread at the time. But they just couldn't, because they'd all booked in other movies like Smokey and the Bandit and a horrible soap opera called The Other Side of Midnight. It became a great problem for Lucasfilm and Fox to have, because it created this great supply and demand problem.
The long lines that we've
come to. Long lines, yeah.
So we're pretty used to, these days, big franchise trilogies coming out in really short succession. I'm thinking The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, they come out like 1 year after another. But these were very different times, and there was actually, 3 years between each film and the original trilogy?
There was. Not necessarily by design, but it just really took that long to meet the perfectionist standards of George Lucas.
So how did Star Wars fandom change from the release of A New Hope to Return of the Jedi almost a decade later?
Well, by that point, you had an awful lot of fanzines, fanzines, names like Alderaan and Skywalker, and a lot of people were writing their own stories about the franchise, sort of tacitly with Lucasfilm's approval. The 20th Century Fox lawyers weren't too happy about that. But it did certainly evolve. And by the time of Return of the Jedi, you start to get reports of people actually camping out in front of the theater for tickets, which at that point was just unheard of. And they were camping out for all of a few days beforehand. And, of course, that would, by the time of The Phantom Menace in 1999, that would become about a month.
That would be about 2.5 weeks longer than I've ever camped.
I think the record is there was a guy in Seattle who was camped out for more than 300 days before Revenge of the Sith. So there's a long record to beat for anyone who wants to camp out for Episode 7.
You mentioned people starting to write their own stories. Is that what we now refer to as the expanded universe? I guess what is the expanded universe for listeners that don't know?
So the expanded universe was the name that was given to the body of Star Wars novels, games, comic books, and just basically everything that George Lucas didn't have a hand in, but that told a story inside the Star Wars universe. And it was always sort of a second-class citizen of the Star Wars universe. It really, they had this sort of different tiers of canon, as fans call it, you know, the canon of the franchise. And, the expanded universe was always at a lower level. And, of course, recently what happened is Lucasfilm decided to say, well, actually, none of that ever happened. We're moving that over to the universe next door. That's going to be part of a new segment called Legends. And, we're not beholden to it for the new movies or any of the new material. So that was the expanded universe. And then the fan stuff almost existed outside of that, not even inside any level of canon at all. It was just done for the joy of it, really.
I'm speaking about Star Wars fandom with Chris Taylor. He's deputy editor at Mashable and author of How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. There's a really popular clip, Chris, from A New Hope that gets passed around a lot online. It's a scene that takes place in the Death Star, and there's this especially tall stormtrooper who's walking through a doorway in the background of the shot. You've almost definitely seen it. He whacks his head on the frame,
yes.
And then he keeps going as though nothing happened. Well, it's this funny little blooper. It made its way into the original film. What cracks me up the most are the comments on this YouTube video where I first saw it. One of the first ones, and it's totally in earnest, questions why, if stormtroopers were all actually clones of Boba Fett, why would one be taller than the rest? And I think there's something so emblematic of that and the Star Wars fan taking things more seriously than any of the filmmakers originally intended.
Well, not to get too geeky here, but the actual answer to that is that they were not clones of Boba Fett. The stormtroopers were actually conscripts. This is according to, the official word from Lucasfilm itself and from George Lucas. His whole idea was that the clone troopers were obviously clones, and they sort of developed their own personalities. But the stormtroopers were conscripts, and they started acting more like clones. So it's supposed to be this wonderful irony there.
Well, I suppose if I continued to read down in the comments, I probably would have found the correction.
Almost certainly. But the wonderful thing about that is that Lucas really embraced that. He's much more of a goofy director than people give him credit for. And once this was pointed out to him for the special editions that he released in 97, he didn't delete that scene with the stormtrooper hitting his head. He actually added the sound effect of the stormtrooper bashing his head on the Death Star, which I think speaks volumes about what kind of director he is.
Okay, so we can't talk about fandom without talking, of course, about the prequel trilogy. Episodes 1, 2, and 3 came out. The first one came out in 1999. Really divided Star Wars fans, and it was a split that Lucas characterized as being generational. You know, the older fans didn't like the new movies, the younger ones didn't like the old ones. Do you see it that way, or do you take a different spin on it?
It's a little more complicated than that. I mean, obviously, everyone has their own opinions about the movies. I have a chapter in the book called How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Prequels that basically takes us through the stages of prequel grief and finally comes to acceptance. And I think that, you know, there is much to be commended in the prequels. It did sort of kickstart the CGI revolution, which had a lot of good things about it.
Right.
And, it filled in a lot of the areas of Jedi lore that we didn't know previously. But yeah, you know, he likes to characterize as generational. It is to a certain extent. Certainly, it's hard to find an 8-year-old or below who won't laugh at the hijinks of Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
And then there sort of comes a stage in your growing up where you look back on them and you embrace the original trilogy more and you just don't seem to accept the prequel trilogy as much. But all of Star Wars is really based on Flash Gordon and on that kind of space fantasy genre of the 30s and 40s, which was really incredibly cheesy.
Yeah.
And just done for the fun of it. And I really think that that's what Lucas was trying to get back to with the prequels. And maybe we were all just a little too serious about them by that point.
Having done what appears to be an unbelievable amount of research for this book, who was the biggest Star Wars fan you met throughout the time it took you to write it?
Wow. Well, the biggest in terms of the amount of stuff that he owns has to be Steve Sansweet, a former Wall Street Journal reporter who went on to work at Lucasfilm as head of fan relations. And now he owns something called Rancho Obi-Wan, which is the now recognized by the Guinness Book of Records as the world's largest Star Wars collection. It has, I believe, about 300,000 items, and it's up there in a former chicken ranch up in Petaluma. You can become a member and make an appointment.
A pilgrimage.
A pilgrimage. He will give you a three-hour tour of the place. And that's not even enough to begin to scratch the surface.
Well, fandom is a very different beast now than it was during that original trilogy. Now we've got social media, we've got YouTube, Kickstarter. How have these things and these technologies, do you think, enhanced or changed Star Wars fandom in, say, the past decade or so?
Oh, it's just exploded in so many directions. I mean, you have the Stormtrooper Legion, the 501st Legion, that of costuming enthusiasts never would have come together without the internet.
Can you explain briefly what that is?
Absolutely. This is a legion of stormtroopers, basically. They also have Darth Vaders and Boba Fetts and other bad guys, and they do a lot of work for charity. But they also, to get in the club, and about 6,500 people have done this, you have to build your own screen-accurate costume, which
Wow.
means you need six pouches on your belt, not four, you know, that sort of thing. And there's a similar group called the R2 Builders Club. They spend on average about a decade building an R2-D2 to look exactly screen accurate. You know, again, brought together by the internet, even though they're tinkering in their garages. But just there are so many areas. There are so many documentaries about various aspects of Star Wars, of Star Wars history that have come together on Kickstarter. And we're seeing a cultural obsession kind of being played out and perpetuated by the internet. And of course, we're seeing so much speculation about the next movie on the internet that you could fill entire books just with that.
Well, and actually, I'm sort of wondering if, against all odds, I don't think this is going to be the case. I personally feel like there's a good team behind it. But if the new Star Wars movies were to be just the worst bombs of all time, do you think that even that could shake the foundations of Star Wars fandom at this point? Or can Star Wars fans just endure anything?
I think it will endure. And I think the reason is, no matter how bad it is, it's going to bring in a new generation of kids. Because, you know, the prequels did, the Clone Wars TV series did, the Star Wars Rebels TV series that just got started last week, that's bringing in a whole new generation of kids. You know, what we have here is a franchise that's constantly refreshing itself with the new generations that come in, and the older generations grow up and become more cynical about it, and perhaps for a moment they're able to drop their cynicism and you know, accept the joy of just this fun, quirky, weird franchise for what it is. But I also think that J.J. Abrams has assembled a marvelous team, as you say, and everything we're hearing out of it, all of the rumors, if true, do suggest that we're in for a rollicking good story.
So should I expect to see you camping out in line?
Probably not. I think that's more of a 20-something male activity, but I'm sure it will happen. And, you know, God bless and Godspeed to all of those guys camping out.
Chris Taylor, deputy editor at Mashable and author of the book How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. Chris, may the Force be with you.
And also with you, Taylor.
You can learn more about the book, which was released on paperback this week, at wordofmouthradio.org.